Even though a harder Brexit is being undertaken in the name of improved relations with the Commonwealth and the Anglosphere, the risks of Brexit for Ottawa far outweigh the potential advantages. Welcome to the latest podcast of the Balsillie Papers, a peer-reviewed and concise examination of humanity's most critical global problems and how to best achieve the national and global impacts needed to solve them. Today's episode features the paper entitled Shadows of Empire, Hard Brexit, Commonwealth Revival, and UK-Canada Relations. It's authored by Benjamin Martill, lecturer in politics and international relations at the University of Edinburgh in the United Kingdom. This paper, and all Balsillie papers, are brought to you by the Balsillie School of International Affairs in Waterloo, Ontario, Canada. You can find them online at www.balsilliepapers.ca. Now, turning to today's podcast, from Volume 3, Issue Number 3, we present Shadows of Empire, Hard Brexit, Commonwealth Revival, and UK-Canada Relations. The Brexit process in the United Kingdom, or the UK, following that country's vote to leave the European Union, or the EU, on 23rd June 2016, has been underway for over 4 years. During that time, shifting forces in British politics have pushed the country towards a harder Brexit than previously imagined. A hard Brexit is typically defined as the UK leaving the EU's Single Market and Customs Union, foregoing a comprehensive security agreement, and leaving with either a rudimentary free trade agreement, or FTA, or no trade agreement at all. The hardening of the Brexit outcome has gone hand in hand with the adoption of a hard bargaining strategy, aimed at forcing largely unavailable concessions out of Brussels, and the articulation of a global Britain discourse as a basis for the UK's post-Brexit foreign policy. Within a concept of global Britain more specifically, we find substantial pockets of support for the strengthening of Commonwealth ties and for the reconstituting of the Anglosphere as a global political community, with specific emphasis on ties to Australia, Canada, and New Zealand. These developments are related. A hard break from the EU, a hard bargaining style, and veneration of the UK's global status are all positions associated with forms of Eurosceptic right-wing politics in the UK, which has gradually come to define the government's priorities in the Brexit process. The changing nature of the Brexit process has received less attention outside of the UK than perhaps should be the case. This is partly because the salience of Brexit has waned as the process has unfolded, with fewer academic and media articles penned on Brexit and the wider world in recent years. This lack is a consequence of the introspective nature of Brexit, since conversations about world politics in Britain rarely connect to wider global debates, having been designed primarily to reassure domestic audiences. But there are good reasons to engage with the current politics of Brexit outside of the UK, and especially in Canada, since the external effects of British withdrawal depend on the kind of Brexit the UK actually opts for. The justification of a harder Brexit on the basis of improving Commonwealth and Anglosphere ties begs the question of whether this is likely to be the case. Canada is an especially instructive example in this regard, since, as a Commonwealth member and majority English-speaking middle power, it is precisely the kind of country Brexit supporters hope to turn to after EU withdrawal. This article examines how UK-Canada relations will be impacted by a hard Brexit. The article proceeds in two stages. First, it examines in detail how the Brexit process to date has changed the meaning of withdrawal, focusing on the triptych of a harder Brexit, hard bargaining, and the global Britain discourse. Secondly, it considers whether UK-Canada relations will benefit from this harder Brexit, focusing on the categories of diplomacy, foreign policy, economics, and politics. The article concludes that, even though a harder Brexit is being undertaken in the name of improved relations with Commonwealth countries and the Anglosphere, the risks of Brexit for Ottawa far outweigh the potential advantages. Section 1. The Negotiations. Harder Brexit, Hard Bargaining in Global Britain. In 2016, delivering Brexit was initially entrusted to UK Prime Minister Theresa May, who was chosen by the Conservative Party as former Prime Minister David Cameron's successor. As a former Remain supporter, but also a self-declared Euroskeptic, it was believed she could obtain the support of both sides of the deeply divided Conservative Party. The new Prime Minister was under immediate pressure, as a Remainer, to demonstrate her commitment to the Brexit cause and to show that she accepted the will of the people enshrined in the referendum results. In her Lancaster House speech of 17 January 2017, May set out her vision for Brexit, which included a number of red lines beyond which the UK was not prepared to move in its search for a bespoke deal. These included the end of free movement, the end of the jurisdiction of the Court of Justice of the EU, the preclusion of significant payments into the EU budget, and the UK's desire to be outside both the single market and the customs union. The Lancaster House speech also gave a flavor of the hard bargaining that would come to characterize the British position in the talks, including the denigration of compromise, implicit threats to exit the talks, and a strident Eurosceptic rhetoric. While the red lines would come to undermine the talks by precluding ideas of compromise and removing the potential for flexibility, British hard bargaining irritated Brussels and undermined the trust in the relationship. May's belief that the UK was sufficiently powerful to obtain a bespoke deal, her desire to set a high bar for the UK position, and her belief that EU unity would not outlast the first few months of her tenure were all dangerously inaccurate assumptions, which made the negotiations more difficult. Not only did they fail to gauge the EU's interest in negotiating a bespoke deal, they also raised expectations at the domestic level about the kind of Brexit May could deliver. Over the course of the negotiations, support for a no-deal Brexit increased significantly within the Conservative Party, providing a useful platform from which the political right could attack May's deal in her conduct of the talks. In the end, May was unable to convince the EU to offer the bespoke deal that she wanted, nor was she able to convince UK parliamentarians that her deal was the best on offer. This led to the unprecedented defeat of the withdrawal agreement in British Parliament on three separate occasions in early 2019, followed by May's eventual replacement by Boris Johnson on 23rd July 2019. Johnson agreed with the EU revised proposals for Northern Ireland and removed from the political declaration the commitment to a level playing field, which had been a key insistence of Brussels. But he largely continued the hard bargaining approach adopted by May, stressing his willingness to accept a no-deal Brexit and even proroguing Parliament, illegally it would turn out, to try to prevent Parliament from precluding this outcome. Following a general election on the 12th of December, which resulted in a significant victory for the Conservatives, Johnson's revised agreement was passed in Parliament, clearing the final hurdle on the 22nd of January 2020, leading to the UK's exit from the EU and entry into the transition period at the end of that month. Section 2, the yearning for a global Britain. Alongside the articulation of a harder Brexit and a hard bargaining strategy, one of the key slogans of the May years now stuck firmly in the nation's psyche is the notion of global Britain. The concept sees the UK as a global leader post-Brexit, with London focusing on strengthening ties with existing and emerging powers, especially those with which the UK has had a strong historical relationship. It also envisions the UK playing a greater role in global rather than merely European politics. The concept of global Britain was designed to appeal to Brexit supporters, many of whom imagined British withdrawal from the EU would precipitate a return to Britain's post-war and heavily idealized position in global politics, where it was a world leader in economic and military capabilities, as well as in soft power. The Leave campaign emphasized the UK's globality as a key component of its identity, stressing that Britain's EU membership had undermined the UK's standing and constrained its engagement with both non-European allies and rising powers. There are also strong currents of thought in the UK which see Brexit as an opportunity to revitalize ties with the Commonwealth and to reorient the UK's geopolitical and trading relationships towards these countries, especially Australia, Canada, New Zealand, and for some, the ultimate goal of this was the intensification of ties between English-speaking countries in the Anglosphere and even, on some accounts, the institutionalization of such a grouping. Not surprisingly, many commentators, alongside Remain-supporting citizens, have supported a not-so-subtle yearning for empire within the Brexit discourse, as well as a mythologized notion of the UK in the 1940s and 1950s as being at the top of a global hierarchy, abroad and characterized by domestic bliss at home. Beyond the immediate need for a new guiding concept in British foreign policy post-Brexit, the global Britain idea was connected to the ongoing negotiations in a number of respects. First, May's embrace of the concept signaled to those on the right of the Conservative Party that the Prime Minister was pursuing their vision of Brexit, just as the Red Lines had helped dash the fears of Eurosceptics that May would embrace a soft Brexit. Second, the concept was part and parcel of wider efforts to convey the UK's strength in negotiations, projecting to Brussels a facade of power which was supposed to convince the EU27 of the need to give in to British demands for exceptional treatment. Finally, by explicitly signaling demand for a greater international role from third countries, the global Britain concept was designed to signal to Brussels that Britain was prepared to forego an agreement if it were not offered favorable terms, a threat many on the right believed was imperative to wield. Section 3, a hard Brexit for a global Britain. Brexit remains an ongoing process. Attention has now turned to future UK-EU relationship negotiations, over which are ongoing, with Johnson's approach continuing, and at times augmenting, the hard bargaining strategy of the May years. The UK, Brussels is told, is willing to walk away from the table if the EU does not moderate its demands on access to UK waters for fishing, or drop its insistence that Britain commit to maintaining a level playing field in any future trade agreement. Meanwhile, the controversial internal market bill, which, if enacted, would undermine key UK legal commitments in the withdrawal agreement, had led the Commission to open infringement proceedings against the UK. The pattern, then, remains the same. Preferences on Brexit have shifted over time, hardened by the gritty politics of the negotiations and by the revolutionary moment brought about in the referendum's aftermath. Hard bargaining begets hard bargaining, contributing to greater levels of Euroscepticism and greater rewards for politicians on the right to play hardball in negotiations with Brussels. The result is that the UK is heading towards a harder Brexit than many initially feared, with support from a significant proportion of the population, as well as the UK's legislators. Britain's global role post-Brexit is a significant part of this story. The narrative of a great global Britain contributed to the view that Britain's EU membership was shackling the country, and provided a compelling narrative for voters to leave, and, so its proponents believed, it gave London leverage in the Brexit negotiations, given the attractiveness of reconstituting Britain's former, i.e. pre-EU, accession to its global role. Britain's relationship with Canada is, now more than ever, implicated in dominant Brexit narratives. As a majority English-speaking nation, a Commonwealth member, and a major middle power, Canada is one of the countries with which post-Brexit Britain hopes to enjoy improved relations. And indeed, given the prominent role that discourses of globality have played in Brexit, it is not a stretch to suggest that a hard Brexit will be undertaken, partly in Canada's name, and that is with the express belief that this is a good outcome for both Ottawa and London. But is this necessarily the case? The remainder of this article examines the consequences of a hard Brexit for Canada. This is especially important given the changes that have occurred to the idea of Brexit since the concept was first mooted, and the prominence of reconstituting the Anglosphere in justifications for Brexit. Part 4, Brexit and UK-Canada Relations. This section sets out the consequences of a hard Brexit for Canada and for UK-Canada relations in respect of four key categories: diplomacy, foreign policy, economics, and politics. First, let's consider the diplomatic angle and how Brexit will alter Canada's foreign relations with the UK and the EU. Brexit in the UK is often framed as a deliberate choice to focus on Commonwealth countries or transatlantic ties instead of European ones. To many actors, Canada and the US included, This distinction makes sense only from a British perspective, since relations with Europe are often made easier by the shared EU framework. A rupture between Britain and the EU27 makes diplomacy more difficult for Ottawa in three respects. First, it will force Ottawa to pursue more separate strategies of engagement with the UK and the EU, since divergence in the positions of both actors is likely to increase. Coordination with European partners will be more difficult, and it may well be the UK which ends up receiving less of Ottawa's attention. Second, Ottawa's ability to understand and to even shape the direction of the EU will decline, commensurate with the UK's loss of access to EU forums, since, like the United States, Canada has often relied on the UK as an interlocutor to convey its positions to Brussels, given the strength of the bilateral relationship. Third, Brexit has implications for relations with states outside of Europe. Some fear a hard Brexit will make the UK worryingly dependent on highly unequal trade deals from extra-European powers, including the US and China, and that the price of these agreements may intrude into other areas of UK foreign policy. Second, let's consider the effects of Brexit on questions of foreign policy and grand strategy. As a NATO member and a key protagonist in the so-called West, Canada has found a strong and united Europe a helpful bulwark against non-democratic potential adversaries and a crucial second pillar of the liberal international order upon which the country's interests and foreign policy identity have depended since at least 1945. Although Brexit has been justified on the basis that such a move would only strengthen NATO, British withdrawal is far more likely to challenge the liberal international order. First, the foreign policy values on which Brexit has been undertaken represent a move away from the UK's liberal internationalist foreign policy identity. Brexit supporters are more realist in their foreign policy views, less supportive of global multilateralism, and see trade in mercantilist terms rather than through an institutionalist lens, and are also more hawkish on non-democratic powers such as China. Second, Brexit undermines European solidarity and makes less credible the prospect of European strategic autonomy. Since Ottawa's foreign policy preferences are arguably far closer to those of the EU than they are of the United States, the fragmentation of the European pole, such as it is, should prove concerning. Third, far from enhancing NATO, Brexit has actively undermined the broader project of Western solidarity, introduced a raft of political tensions between the EU members of NATO, led to concerns that the UK would walk away from its commitment to European security, and resulted in decreased support for the UK in NATO commitments. Third, in terms of economic relations and trade, Britain has been sold domestically as an opportunity for the UK to trade more with partners such as Canada. But it is not clear that British withdrawal offers Canadian firms opportunities that do not exist already. The UK, with its liberal model of capitalism, found it perfectly easy to attract investment from outside the Union whilst a member. Since the EU-Canada Comprehensive Economic and Trade Agreement, or CETA, has succeeded in removing and lowering numerous tariff barriers, Brexit will make trade between Canada and the UK more difficult, since the agreement will cease to apply to Britain after the transition period. Brexit will also, likely and ironically enough, result in enhanced regulatory barriers, since any divergence between UK and EU standards will produce a more complex regulatory environment for Canadian firms to navigate when trading with European partners, increasing the non-tariff barriers to trade. Even where standards remain the same, and this is not a foregone conclusion given the politics of Brexit, existing forms of redress on which firms could rely, including recourse to the Court of Justice of the EU, will no longer be available to them should they need to seek redress. And finally, what are the political considerations at stake in post-Brexit UK-Canada relations? Brexit has been sold as an opportunity to rekindle political ties with extra-European actors. But engaging with post-Brexit Britain also comes with a number of novel political risks. One risk comes from the highly divided nature of the UK's body politic after Brexit, which has seen existing political divisions either exacerbated or replaced by social conflicts between Leave and Remain supporters. The highly partisan nature of the Brexit project and the global Britain vision threatens to make bilateral relations a more difficult affair. Not only does this mean the UK's ties to extra-European powers are now more politicized, it also makes it highly likely that the direction of UK foreign relations will be reversed by a different government in the future, making London's commitments more fickle. And there's also the more existential risk of what kind of example Brexit itself establishes for states engaged in multilateralism, and whether this is something that, even implicitly, should be endorsed. Connections are not difficult to draw between the Brexit vote and the kind of forces which brought former President Donald Trump to the White House, with severe consequences for multilateralism and transatlantic solidarity. Furthermore, radical right-wing parties in Europe are benchmarking Brexit to see if the British decision offers a successful model for their own countries. Of course, it's not all doom and gloom, and there will no doubt be opportunities for UK-Canada relations emerging from the Brexit process. Depending on Britain's keenness to sign trade deals with other partners, Canada may well get more preferential terms than it would otherwise in any bespoke UK-Canada agreement. The UK may cease to clamp down on immigration from the Commonwealth once it's free to limit intra-European migration, making it easier for Canadian civilians to live and work in the UK, should they choose. And there are early indications that security and defence collaboration between the UK and Canada may be stepped up, and cooperation on areas of mutual concern, including Arctic security, could improve as a result. And of course, it will not be lost in Ottawa that the British desire to strengthen Commonwealth ties will amplify Canada's influence in the UK. The point this article makes is not that there are no benefits from Brexit, rather that these benefits are either incidental or they are dwarfed by other risks. The increased difficulty of trade, the undermining of intra-Western solidarity, the UK's long-term decline as an economic powerhouse, the rise of populist politics, Brexit raises all these daunting prospects in Ottawa, and they come with a high price. Section 5, Conclusion and Policy Recommendations. The Brexit vote in June 2016 shocked global audiences. Since that moment, the salience of the British decision has gradually decreased, whilst, paradoxically, what Brexit means and what it can be has hardened against the backdrop of the negotiations and shifting political incentives in the UK. Successive British governments have pursued a harder vision of Brexit, increasingly hardened by their negotiating style, and articulated a distinct vision of a post-Brexit UK, free to engage with the Commonwealth and English-speaking nations. This article has characterized the nature of this hard bargaining and examined what a harder Brexit would mean for UK-Canada relations. The ongoing changes in the Brexit process requires an update of the consequences of British withdrawal for external actors. The invocation of improved Commonwealth and Anglosphere ties, including improved ties with Canada specifically, begs the question of how accurate these claims are in reality. The argument articulated here is that, through a harder Brexit, what's being pursued in the name of improved ties with the rest of the world, in it, Ottawa stands to lose far more than it will gain in terms of its diplomatic relations, its foreign policy goals, its ability to trade with the UK, and its broader political preferences. Ottawa should thus take care to avoid encouraging Britain that sunnier climes are available outside the EU. Perceived demand for an independent UK externally has been one of the key drivers of the Brexit process. Insofar as visions of a reconstituted Anglosphere or Commonwealth draw the UK away from a trade deal with the EU, the consequences of such a move are worth spelling out. Ottawa should be aware of the consequences which a harder Brexit may bring about for the economic ties between both countries, as well as for their respective positions in today's international political order. Even if moderate distributional opportunities can be identified from the Brexit process, it's unlikely that these will be sufficient to compensate for the hit which transatlantic cooperation is likely to take from the Brexit vote, nor the economic implications of Brexit for Canada-UK trade. Whether or not it is flattering that the UK wishes to undertake a hard Brexit in Canada's name, it is a fact of life that patterns of trade, geopolitical alignments, and identities will not change simply because the UK wishes them to. All the will in the world cannot overcome the decades of Europeanization and economic continentalism that have steadily realigned the priorities of the UK and Canada, respectively. Today's episode, Shadows of Empire, Hard Brexit, Commonwealth Revival, and UK-Canada Relations, was written by Benjamin Martell, lecturer in politics and international relations at the University of Edinburgh in the UK. For more episodes of the Balsillie Papers podcast, or to download free PDFs of each peer-reviewed Balsillie paper, check out our new website, www.balsilliepapers.ca. Thanks for listening, and until next time, stay safe out there.